From Paris to Portland, you've picked up the guidebooks. You've followed the advice. This is the Fromer Travel Show. Pauline Fromer, president of Fromer Media, and Jason Cochran, editor-in-chief of Fromers.com, with the most complete, the most up-to-date travel information available anywhere. The pages of the Fromer's guidebooks come alive right now, exclusively on 77 WABC.
Welcome to the Fromer Travel Show. I'm Pauline Fromer.
And I'm Jason Cochran.
And if Jason sounds a little tired, that's because he is jet-lagged. And that leads to our question of the day. Here's the question of the day. What are your favorite travel experiences in Asia? Jason just got back from Hong Kong.
Last show, I ran off to the airport. And right before this show, I ran back to the airport.
Can you believe it? That's devotion. So what would you say? Would you say that Hong Kong is one of your favorite destinations? And is there anything there that really makes your heart sing?
It's the fourth or fifth time I've been there. And I have to say, I like it even more every time I go. I think Hong Kong is a great entry city if you've never been to Asia before. Because, of course, it was an English holding for such a long time, until 1997. Everyone speaks English, pretty much. Everyone you need to speak to will speak English or know how to communicate with you. A lot of the food is familiar. It's a very navigable city because they're on the cutting edge of public transportation. It's just really, really easy and pleasant to get around. And it's also just one of the most beautiful cities in the world. Because there's this harbor in the middle. And there's skyscrapers on both sides of it with mountains behind them. So it's spectacular no matter which way you look. Mm. It's a great place. So I have to say Hong Kong has become one of my more favorite cities. And I recommend anybody who wants to go to Asia, who's a little nervous about it, should go there first.
I realized I forgot to give out the number. 800-848-9222. If you'd like to discuss your favorite places in Asia or just want to ask any kind of travel question, that's the number to call. 800-848-9222. So, Jason, while you were there, what did you do?
I ran around town seeing almost everything. I did the Victoria Peak, which is, I guess, the most touristy thing you can do. I was there with a friend, so I wanted to show. Victoria Peak has been a tourist attraction since the 1880s. There's a tram that goes all the way up to the tip top where you would look down on what was then just a little tiny little piece of the city. Of course, the city has expanded since then, but the peak is still a primary site. And you board this tram that climbs up the mountain, an inclined railway that was built in the 1880s originally.
And it's still same railway?
It's the same railway with, of course, updated trams that now look like the old trams. It looks like Mr. Rogers' tram climbing the mountain.
Oh, how great.
When you get to the top, though, it's this ridiculous shopping mall in a funny shape they call the Walk. But the view, you can't believe. You can see on both sides of the mountain down below. But I also ate a lot. I went to dim sum places. I went to one dim sum place. It was Halloween. They were serving Halloween-themed dim sum. So little sausage rolls, wrapped in dough with little eyeballs on them to make them look like mummies.
Oh, my goodness.
And wontons. You know how the wontons kind of have little wings on them? They put eyes on them so they look like bats. It was fun. They had such a good time with Halloween there.
Did people dress up for Halloween? Was there trick-or-treating?
Yes, there was, especially in like the party parts of town where all the bars are. But I think they're it's almost like they've just sort of discovered Halloween because none of them are dressing as zombies or, sexy nurses. They're just pretty much putting, conical witch hats on or boas or very, very simple things, which you can buy at kiosks all over that part of town. So they're not really over the top with the death. It's more about having a good time. Politely, because they're very polite.
I know that you also are a Disney fanatic. You write our Orlando book, and you spent one day at the Disneyland that's in Hong Kong. Did they have special Halloween stuff?
They sure did. They had a walkthrough haunted house, which was based on Nightmare Before Christmas, which is a classic now.
Oh, yeah. Christmas so not too movie. Scary, more kind of magical.
No,
yeah.
Absolutely. They gave out candy. See, Hong Kong, they don't really appreciate seeing corpses and things. It's not fun to them. In fact, the Haunted Mansion at Disney is not haunted. it's enchanted so that you can kind of remove the death and the bad juju out of the story.
Right.
So that's the way they want to approach this kind of stuff. It's more magic. In fact, they were giving candy out to everybody as you walked off and on the rides at Disneyland, which is more than they would do, I think, here. Interestingly, Hong Kong government owns 53% of Disneyland there.
Huh.
That was pretty much how Disney was able to get it made. So Hong Kong, the city owns it, but Disney manages it, which is an interesting arrangement.
Does that affect the visitor experience at all?
I would think it's not very crowded, and I think they can take the losses because it's a city amenity.
Huh.
But I would say this is the kind of park you could visit on the way to the airport for 5 or 6 hours and see most of what's in there. They're just slowly building it out. It opened in 2005 with just a handful of rides. They now have twice as many, but you can still be done by about 3 or 4. And there's a luggage stall where you can drop your luggage off as you walk in if you do want to go there on the way to the airport, which is very easy to do.
So a lot of people must do that. So is it as expensive as the Disneylands in here?
It's like $60 or $70. Yeah, it's about half as much. Yeah, but maybe some of the listeners have been to Hong Kong and have their own happy memories of it. Our number for that is 800-848-9222. Another thing that's just happened this week in Hong Kong is they've opened a bridge, or I should say the mainland Chinese government has opened a bridge between Hong Kong and Macau, which is about, I think, 40 miles west. They're both independent sort of special administrative regions of China, but they have their own laws, their own rules, their own free speech. And this bridge is, I think, 34 miles long.
Wow.
And 4 miles up the bridge, the ducks underwater for 4 miles as a tunnel so that ships can go in and out. Because Hong Kong, as you know, is an incredibly important shipping city.
Sure.
But this bridge is fascinating. You're not allowed to just drive across it. You have to get a special permit from the Chinese government. And so a lot of people in Hong Kong are furious because their tax money was spent building this $20 billion bridge. Oof. But they're not allowed to use it.
Will they in the future?
No, the whole thing is sort of designed to bring these two cities sort of closer to the bosom of China. And if you do drive across this bridge, apparently what has been reported in Hong Kong press is you wear like a Fitbit and there are cameras to detect your heartbeat. And if you yawn more than 3 times in 30 seconds, they stop you.
Wow. Because they're worried that you're going to be a drowsy driver and have an accident?
So they monitor drivers.
I don't understand who is driving on this bridge, though, if most people can't.
Well, people who have donated to charities in that southern part of China can get a permit. Certain members of the political party can get a permit.
Huh.
Very wealthy people can get a permit. Otherwise, there's no public transport across it, but you could get a bus. It's just begun. You could maybe get a privately operated bus and get a ticket on it, and they'll take you across.
But
you can't drive on it yourself.
Do you think that this will be a big tourist bridge? Because, Macau has a very, very different ambiance than Hong Kong because it was a Portuguese colony, whereas Hong Kong was British. So two very, very different places. And Macau, of course, is world famous for all of its gambling. I would think that this bridge would make a very interesting trip for somebody who wanted to see those two cities.
It would. I don't know enough because it's just begun about how to get a ticket on a bus across. I'm assuming it's going to be possible for tourists. But even if it's not, ferries leave from Hong Kong City every 15 minutes to Macau and take about an hour. So it's not as if Macau is hard to reach as it is. And you won't be. People go for 5 or 6 hours right now anyway on Hong Kong vacations.
Well, absolutely fascinating. We have to take our first break. Let me remind everybody, our number is 800-848-9222. That's 800-848-9222. You can talk about Asia. You can ask your travel questions on wherever in the world you're going. You can comment on Hong Kong. We'd love to hear from you. I'd also like to remind everybody that part of the reason we're on air is because of our wonderful sponsors. And one of those sponsors is Allianz Travel Insurance. They are there when things go wrong. We mostly talk on this show about things going right in travel, but things go wrong all the time. You could lose your luggage. You could get ill and need to find an English language doctor in a place like, not so much like Hong Kong, because as Jason said, you're going to find a lot of English spoken there. But in other parts of China, say, you could miss the boat. quite literally. If you were taking a cruise ship, that's a big, big problem if you miss the boat. And insurance can help. To learn about all of the policies you can get from Allianz, visit Allianz travelinsurance.com. That's Allianz travelinsurance.com.
Pauline Frommer, Jason Cochran, The Frommer Travel Show. Only here, where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
This week's program is brought to you by Allianz Travel Insurance. Protect your travel investment from unexpected problems with Allianz. Visit Allianz travelinsurance.com. And we started out the show with a question of the day, which was, what's your favorite experiences in Asia? What are your favorite places in Asia? Well, we got an email response, and let me say we love getting responses that way. Our email address is frommertravelshow@yahoo.com. That's also a great place to send any travel questions. That's FROMMER, travelshow@yahoo.com. And we heard from Elliot in Connecticut. He says, Ubud, Bali, Indonesia. It has dance festivals, rice paddies, nearby craft towns for metal and woodworking, batik clothing design shops, unusual foods, etc. So hands down, Elliot's favorite is Ubud. I like Ubud too. I like Bali a lot.
I haven't been to Bali, but for an Australian, Bali is their Caribbean.
Yes.
It's where they go to take an island vacation. So I know there are Americans who are like, I couldn't go to Bali. It's too exotic. You'll be fine. All the Australians there are saving beers for you.
In fact, that's why I always say avoid Kuta in Bali, because that is kind of the equivalent of, I don't know, Fort Lauderdale in Florida, or what Fort Lauderdale used to be. It's a big, big party town for Australians. So the streets can be awash in vomit after the end of a...
That's nice.
Well, all right, let's turn back to the phones. 800-848-9222 is our number. We have Lynn calling in from Brooklyn. Hey, Lynn, thank you so much for calling.
Oh, hi, Pauline. My question is on Sicily. I know it's not have to do with Hong Kong.
That's all right.
My friend asked me. She wants to go to Sicily, and she is this undecided between whether she should go with Globus Travel or Colette. And the Globus one is 6 hotels in Sicily, and Colette is only 2 hotels.
Okay.
So that's what she wanted to know, which was the, you thought, the better trip.
Well, they're both mass market tour operators. The good part of that is she's going to get a very well-priced tour. The bad part is she will be traveling with 20 to 40 other people in a big motor coach. There are other companies that I'd suggest she look at, perhaps ones that are more Italy specialists or just do Italy. There's two wonderful websites. One is called TourRadar.com, and the other one is called
Stride
Travel. And what these companies do is they present a marketplace of tours. So you can see different tours, what's offered, how many hotels they'll use, what their ratings are from users who have used those tours in the past, and the different prices. And I think she'll be amazed that she can probably get tours just like the one she's looking at, maybe slightly less expensive, I don't know offhand, maybe at the same price level, but with a smaller group of people. And I think that's better, to be honest with you, because when you travel with less people, there's less herding that has to go on, and you'll see more.
Oh, that's
And Lynn,
great.
I'd also want her to consider how many times does she want to change hotels. Now, you have to balance the number of times you change hotels with how much of the island you get to see. But 6 hotels in 10 days is very different from 2 hotels in 10 days. It might also affect, again, how far you can go from the hotel each day. But it's something to consider in her energy level and what kind of vacation she wants.
So my guess is on the Globus tour, I mean, what everybody does when they go to Sicily is they go around the perimeter of the island and they see Palermo, which is this extraordinary city that has gone through dozens of civilizations. It was owned by the Moors and the Norman conquests and the Italians, and it so it has a lot from different eras of history. You go to Agrigento, which has some of the most beautiful intact ancient Greek ruins in all of Sicily. You go to Taormina, which has this extraordinary amphitheater. But you can't see all of those sites if you're only going to two hotels. You really have to go to more than that. However, if you only go to two hotels, you're probably going to have hub and spoke touring. You're going to see fewer areas, but with more depth. So it really depends on what interests her, you know,
yes.
to spend more time and get to know a couple of places really well, or to get more of an overall vision of everything Sicily has to offer.
Oh, that's great. So you suggest the Tour Radar.
Look at Tour Radar or StrideTravel.com. Both of those places, websites, are marketplaces. So you're going to see a lot of different companies' tours listed, all one after the other, all with their different details broken out, so she can have a better idea of what's out there.
Oh, so that's great. It's better than just the Globus or the Colette tours.
Yeah, I mean, those are both fine companies,
yes.
Very solid financially, but she may be able to do better. I'm not sure.
Well, I appreciate that so much.
Thank you very much. Thanks for calling, Lynn. Let's turn next to Dolores in Elmhurst, New York. And Dolores, I hear you've been to Hong Kong.
Oh, yes, loved it. I was on a cruise that ended up in Singapore, which I love, but then I traveled on my own to Hong Kong because I was flying back. And I want to highly recommend an amusement park called Ocean Park, which
sure.
is in a stunning setting. I belong to ACE, American Coaster Enthusiast.
Yeah,
I
know about that.
We celebrated our 45th anniversary, and we take foreign trips. Now, many of us travel independently, as I do, but we just celebrated our 45th anniversary at King's Dominion and Busch Gardens this past summer. We always have our convention, Father's Day, but again, I'm a fanatical member of ACE and travel independently, but Ocean Park is a stunning setting, and taking that cable car to the top of the mountain, it's just striking, so I wanted to highly recommend that. I was so
impressed. Absolutely right. And in recent years, Hong Kong has finally opened a subway that goes to Ocean Park, making it much easier for tourists to go to it. What used to be a little bit more difficult.
I took the bus. I was staying in Kowloon, so I took the ferry across, and there's a bus that leaves at a certain time, but I missed the last bus, so I took a taxi, and I'm very cheap. I never, very seldom take taxis. But I was just thought the setting was absolutely striking. And again, I do belong to this coaster club. So in fact, some of us, again, we travel independently.
Right.
So, and again, ACE, American Coaster. And also, getting back to Hong Kong Disney, Mystic Manor is most unusual.
Sure.
I think it's...
Yeah, we wrote it three times.
Yes. And I just love Hong Kong. Can I mention a particular hotel, or is that not...
Sure, if you
Did
want
you like
to.
It?
The hotel Icon, because I'm very frugal, but I go by TripAdvisor. I stayed in the Hotel Icon, which is a luxury hotel, very out of character for me, but it was stunning. You know, there's a harbor view or city view. They had I never even went into their pool, but they have transportation, you know, to the airport and everything. But it's big, it's value for your dollar. Let's just put it that way.
Oh, well,
yeah,
great.
My big recommendation for where to stay in Hong Kong is in Kowloon as well, where you stayed.
Yes.
If you stay in Kowloon, you get to look at Hong Kong Island, which is a great deal. There's this one building at the very end of Kowloon, right before you take the subway or the ferry over, and it's a YMCA, the Salisbury. And you think, I'm not going to stay at the Y, but if you do, it's like a normal hotel. You know, it's like a mid-priced hotel, right? And it's right, the view, you cannot compare it. It's next door to the peninsula where you'd spend $1,000 a night. Instead, you're spending $150 for a harbor view at the YMCA Salisbury. It's the best kept secret in Hong Kong.
I will have to look that up for the next time.
All right.
I loved it. Absolutely loved it. I was there at Christmas holiday time. The holiday decorations were incredible. Love Hong Kong and your program as always.
Oh, well, thank you, Dolores. We appreciate you calling. I'm looking at the clock. We have to take another break. Let me remind everybody, we'd love to hear from you. You are the engine that keeps this show running. 800-848-9222 is the number, and we'll be right back.
This is the Frommer Travel Show. Inspiring locations, inspiring ideas for New York. Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
This week's program is brought to you by Allianz Travel Insurance. Protect your travel investment from unexpected problems with Allianz. Visit allianztravelinsurance.com. And also, give us a call, 800-848-9222. It's very interesting today. We're getting a lot of emails. I got one from somebody who I just have initials for. They are BC, and they say, "My favorite Asian location is Taiwan, the Democratic China, with many beautiful and diverse parts to visit." I totally agree. I've been to Taiwan 3 times in the last 5 years and never ran out of things to see and do. It's a wonderful place. That BC went on to say, "Jason went on and on about all the pros of Hong Kong, leaving out the 800-pound gorilla sitting in the room, starting with the lack of free speech in Hong Kong." Jason, how would you respond?
Well, I think it's a little harsh to say they have no free speech. I do think they're in a transition going from the English way of things to the mainland Chinese way of things. There have been some terrible incidents of booksellers who, this is about 3 years ago, then they sold books at this bookstore that were sometimes critical of the Chinese government, and they all disappeared. Four or five of these people worked there, and they turned up in mainland China, you know, on video saying, "We want to be here," when in fact they were, you know, had some rendition going on and they were taken.
Right.
So that did, but it was unusual enough that it made the news. But it's also, people are very nervous about what the future holds. That's the 800-pound gorilla, because, you know, right now they have their speech, but they can see under the hood of the way the government is working there, things slowly shifting. They have used an English-style school system. They're shifting that. They can't choose their own parties anymore to vote for. Beijing chooses the parties. And then they say, "Well, we gave you a choice." And there are enormous demonstrations that are happening, especially among young people, in protest of this. And they are not disappeared, these people. So there is some free speech. But they see the direction it's going, and it makes them nervous. And some of the wealthier people are choosing to leave. I've heard of a friend of I have a very good friend there who has lots of friends who are making plans to go because they can. But it's nowhere near what mainland China is. And that's what everyone's so nervous about, is that it could go in that direction.
Right. Well, very interesting. Thank you. Let's turn back to the phones. We have Marianne from Long Branch, New Jersey on the line. And Marianne, I hear that you've been to Hong Kong as well.
I was there quite some time ago, and my favorite thing was the double-decker trolley. I don't know what, do they still have that? It was great.
Oh, they sure do. They're just as crowded.
Oh, it's so fun.
And if you stand up and hit your head on the ceiling, the egg you get on your skull is just as big. But they're cheap. They're a great way to go basically along the shoreline. It follows the original shoreline of Hong Kong Island. Now it's about, I guess, a quarter of a mile inland because they put so much landfill in. And underneath it, there's an island line, which is the MTR or subway version that goes underneath. And for a while, it was thought they would close these trams because, my, you've got this subway. But now the subway's so full, they keep them both open. And also, so the trams also go up the hill a little bit that the MTR doesn't do.
It was just great to sit there and wander and look and just...
The public transportation system is a joy. Star Ferry, which is a very famous ferry system, zips across the harbor like every 10 minutes, and you feel like you're living in 1890. It is so much fun to go between the two skylines. And the MTR, the way you pay for it is so much better than the Metro card. You load money on what's called an octopus card, and you tap it, and it shows you how much you have left. But the twist is you can use it all over the place. You can hold it against a vending machine and get something to drink. You can go to 7-Eleven and make your purchase with your octopus card.
Huh.
So the octopus card is like an octopus. Its hands, its tentacles go all over your, you know, your purchasing life. It's a great way to do it. And they've been doing it for about 20 years, and MetroCard is still sort of that basic swipe technology. We're so behind.
Interesting.
We went to, I don't know whether it's there anymore, the Stanley Market. We had our kids.
Yep.
They could shop. They could buy whatever they want because everything was so cheap. It was great.
And it doesn't last long either. These, you know, the Mong Kok Night Market and the Stanley Market. But it's so much fun. Who cares?
Yeah. Well, wonderful.
Thank you for...
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you for calling, Marianne. Oh, thank you. That's so kind. So we always do try and talk about some of the big news in travel on this show. And I think the big news this week has been Venice. I don't know if you've all seen the videos of Venice. But according to news sources, 70% of the city is now underwater. It's having one of the worst flooding episodes in
its
history.
We're talking like a foot of water.
A foot of water.
It's not
submerged. Yes, right. No, no,
no. But you can't go anywhere without slogging through it.
And there's this video I saw of a restaurant fully operational with people in waiters sitting at tables, and the waiters had waiters.
Oh, I've waiters never... and waiters, yeah.
And they're sloshing through the water, and it just makes me think of that. There was this Katharine Hepburn movie.
Summertime.
Summertime.
I watched it a couple of days before I went to Hong Kong.
Ah.
It's about David Lean shot it in 1955, and it's beautiful. It makes Venice the most romantic character in any film you've ever seen, and Venice has not changed since that time either.
Right, but I also remember there's a story about what happened during the filming of that, because there's a famous moment where Katharine Hepburn falls into one of the canals, and apparently they put all kinds of bleach and cleaner into one section of the canal to try and make it safe for Katharine Hepburn to fall into. But even with all of their efforts, she picked up some kind of terrible infection in that canal.
An eye infection, I think.
Eye infection that plagued her for the rest of her life. And so I'm worried that people are sloshing through this water day in and day out. It just...
I know. And I'm also worried because this is earlier than it usually happens, and it's more than has usually happened.
Yes.
So it's a real sign of danger to come in Venice. As the sea levels rise, Venice will fall.
Yeah. No, no. It's a really, really crazy, crazy thing. On the good news front, there's also a new museum that's opened in Ohio. Can you talk a little bit about that, Jason?
You know, there's a lot of memorials in America that are dedicated to veterans of specific wars. Now we have, finally... a memorial and museum dedicated to veterans in general, all wars, which I think is kind of lovely because, you know, you don't have to go to the specific war that the veteran you love fought in. It's called the National Veterans Memorial and Museum. It's in Columbus, Ohio, and it honors the some 40 million people, Americans, who have served. And it opened on the 27th of October, which is last week. It's this beautiful, swirling architecture that Architectural Digest has praised. And so I think it's worth a stop if you're near Columbus. And
I'm kind of surprised this has never existed in the past.
Isn't it surprising?
Yeah.
I thought I had to look and see, and it really hasn't. We, of course, a lot of towns have their own memorials to veterans and churches and like I said, individual wars and cemeteries, but there's not been a tribute just to veterans in general.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we have to take another break. Let me remind everybody, we're here to talk to you. We want to answer your travel questions. 800-848-9222 is the number. FromerTravelShow@yahoo.com is the address. And before we go to commercial, a little mini commercial for our partner, Allianz Travel Insurance. We not only love their policies, but we work with them to ensure that their customers get good advice. And that's what you get when you go to the Fromer Guidebooks. We think we're better than TripAdvisor, damn it. But when you go to get a policy from Allianz, you're also going to get for 24 destinations advice from Fromers on how to put together an itinerary, on what the best sites are in the destination you're visiting, whether that's the best restaurants, the best attractions, the best thing for kids, the best places for honeymooners. We cover it all. And you will get it all when you get a policy from Allianz. To learn more, go to Allianz travelinsurance.com. That's Allianz travelinsurance.com.
The most popular destinations for you and your family, right here. Pauline Fromer and Jason Cochran, The Fromer Travel Show, 77 WABC.
Welcome back to the Fromer Travel Show. I'm Pauline Fromer here with Jason Cochran, and we want to get right back to the phones. 800-848-9222 is our number, and that is the number that Mary in Bayonne, New Jersey called. Mary, you are live on the Fromer Travel Show. What's on your mind?
Oh, you know, I wanted to know, is that true that, like, in the Chinese, if you're in a bedroom, you can't have mirrors face your bed?
Might be a feng shui thing. I'm not a feng shui expert, but I mean, come to think of it, I didn't have any mirrors facing my bed in the hotel But they don't usually anyway, even in America. But it's a good question. I mean, there's lots of architectural considerations that are made when you build something in China that we wouldn't make in the U.S. For example, no fourth floor. It's it's their 13.
Right.
Eighth floor is incredibly lucky. So
I'm so glad you mentioned feng shui, because I thought there might be another reason for mirrors and beds, but I won't get into that. Thank you for calling, Mary. Let's talk next to Mimi in Westchester. Mimi, you are live on the Frommer Travel Show. Thank you for calling.
Yes, thank you. I use Allianz. I'm going to Florence, Italy, by the way, with them.
Fabulous.
2 weeks. I love them. They're terrific.
Great.
But I wanted to ask you, we're supposed to get possibly on a princess cruise to Honduras and Belize in December. Is that a bad time to go on the water? Is it too rough?
Not that I know of. I think it should be fine. You know, when you're in Central America, December is I mean, the weather, it's so close to the equator that the weather stays fairly consistent year-round. Obviously, you'll be out of hurricane season. I think you'll be fine. Jason?
Because it was so inexpensive, I was surprised. But the only
You know why it's inexpensive in December? What? Because everybody is saving their money to travel over the holidays.
Oh.
So if you're traveling at the beginning of December, that's one of the lowest times of the year in terms of prices to cruise. So you just got a good deal.
I got a good deal. I was worried, because when you get a good deal, you never know.
Yeah, but that's the reason why. It doesn't have to do with the weather.
And the other thing is, we're going to Honduras. Honduras is terrible. That's where all those people are coming from walking up South America. They said it was a terrible place to be. Is that scary for us or what?
You should be protected by the cruise lines. The cruise lines don't put their passengers in danger. So they will take you to parts of Honduras that are safe. From what I understand, the big problem in Honduras are the gangs. And those are going to, they're going to target Hondurans more so than visitors. Jason, do you have a thought on this?
Yeah, you know, I agree. Generally, cruise lines are very worried about lawsuits. And at the first hint of trouble, like legitimate trouble, they'll just change to go somewhere else instead. So I wouldn't worry too much. If the cruise line's going to bring you there, they have done all the due diligence, because they don't want to be caught up in it either.
Yeah. Exactly. All right. Thank you for making me feel better.
Sure. Have a great trip, Mimi. We also, as we said earlier in the show, get emailed questions. You can email them to frommertravelshow@yahoo.com. And we got one from Katie. I'm going to do the other one first, because the other one's for Jason. And this is from Rick. Jason, on a recent podcast, you mentioned a museum of gardens in London. We're going to be in Chelsea for the flower show in late. We're going to be there for the Chelsea flower show in late May. Already have tickets and want to visit other gardens in the greater London area. Is there a website or other source for finding out 1 or 2 day trips out of London to gardens in nearby areas such as Cambridge? What do you say,
yes,
Jason?
The first thing I'll say is I'm so happy you got your tickets for the Chelsea Garden Show, because it does sell out. Believe it or not, it's a massive event. It even is on TV every night in the UK in the spring.
Wow.
Gardening. Yeah. Gardening, of course, is a huge long tradition in England. So get your hotel now, because hotels do definitely sell out. I ran up against that myself when I was researching the London Guide, which is out this week, by the way.
Yes.
This year. So do get your hotel now. Make sure you got that sewn up. Yes. Go to the Royal Horticultural Society. It's rhs.org.uk. They have a whole database of great gardens and a whole bunch of resources on where you can find better ones. You can plug in a city. It'll give you a bunch. And, of course, the Museum of Garden History will give you some ideas as well. That's what I mentioned before. It's in a part of town called Lambeth, which is right across the bridge from Chelsea. So make sure you go. It's in an old deconsecrated church, a beautiful old building from, I think, the early 1800s, maybe 1700s. And when they were fixing this church up, they've discovered underneath the altar a vault that they'd never known was there. And they put a camera down in it and went in. They found all these old coffins of archbishops that people had forgotten about. And so it was an incredible find. They didn't know where all these bodies had gone for hundreds of years, and there they were, and they're still there in the Museum of Garden History.
Wow, very strange. All right, let's now take Katie's question, which is an email. She says, I love your show. It's my first time writing in. I hope to be traveling to Amsterdam from New York in mid-April, the weeks leading into Easter. I was thinking of spending 4 nights in Amsterdam and doing day trips to cities within the Netherlands. My question is, could you recommend another city/country to visit for 3 nights? I've been to Paris many times and have also visited Brussels. I would be happy to do a train ride for 3 to 4 hours to get there. Ideally, I would fly into one city and out of the other. Well, Brussels and Paris are the obvious ones.
I know the one you're thinking. It's probably the one I'm thinking.
What
the
is
cute
that?
Little town? Bruges.
Yeah. Bruges is this town that is lost in time. It was one of the most important towns in Europe in probably the 1400s, the 1300s, the 1200s, because it was a major trading city. And then the river that led into Bruges silted up in the mid-1400s. And so all commerce stopped. About 3/4 of the population moved elsewhere, and it became trapped in time. And so you go there, and it really is like walking back into the Middle Ages. It's an extraordinary place.
It's absolutely transporting. I don't know anyone who left Bruges saying they didn't want to go back.
Yeah.
I think everyone loves it. The other suggestion gives me a chance to say a little news. The Channel Tunnel train, which has now been running for 25 years, has never gone to Amsterdam from London and Paris until now. So now you can get between Amsterdam and London in about 3.5 hours on the high-speed train, which you could never do before. It's a brand new thing. So if London is not something you've done and it's on your radar, you can get there in just a couple hours as well.
And it's smart to fly into Amsterdam and out of London, because then you avoid that terrible tax that you get.
It's a huge landing fee.
Yeah, when you fly into London, it's what, like $100 or so?
$250, $300. It's insane, yeah.
Yeah, so that's a good way to see London, is to fly somewhere else first. I'm looking at the clock. We have to take one more short break. This is like a minute-long commercial, and then we will be right back. We have time to take your questions. 800-848-9222 is the number. Give us a call. We'll be back in a flash.
Get a jump on vacation plans. The Fromer Travel Show. Pauline Fromer and Jason Cochran. 77 WABC.
That's right. You're listening to the Fromer Travel Show. Our number is 800-848-9222. And Jason, there was a really interesting study out this week that it's a bit stomach churning, but it's about airplane cabins. Can you give the details?
Yes. As a Canadian study, they went around an airplane swabbing different bits of the cabin to determine what the dirtiest were, E. coli germs that,
right.
Could start pandemics. So what do you think is the dirtiest part of the airplane cabin?
Well, the bathroom, right?
That's fifth.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
The tray table.
That, I think, is third. Yeah.
What, the armrest?
It turns out it's the headrest.
Where
your head is.
Oh, you can't avoid that. That's
nope.
A bummer. Well, dirty in what way? I mean, what's on it?
Well, just as Adelaide says in Guys and Dolls, so much virus inside that the microscope slide looks like a day at the zoo.
Oh, wow.
There's all sorts of goodness growing in the Petri dishes. Also on seatbelts and bathroom door handles.
Ah, okay.
But tray tables aren't that great either. So apparently they're not cleaning the airplanes as often as they need to, because they're turning them around so quickly because they're trying to squeeze every dollar out of them.
Yeah.
Inside the seat, by the way, don't think it's safer inside the seat pocket, because that's also dirty. They just need to do deeper cleans with stronger chemicals and lights that they don't do, except maybe once a year.
Interesting. Wow. Okay. Well, thank you for that. Let's turn back to the phones. We have Paul calling from Teaneck. Hey, Paul, you're live on the Fromer Travel Show. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Pauline. Thanks for taking the call. I do all my errands on Saturday, and I listen to you all the time in the car. my favorite place was Bangkok, and then you take the train down to this beach called Pattaya. It wasn't the fancy one back in the day when I was there.
Right.
And you could stay there for next to nothing, and you could eat for next to nothing, and it was incredible.
And the food is great, and the people, there's few kinder, gentler people than the Thais, I think. They're just such wonderful folks to travel to.
I was busy for a while, but I heard you talking about Bangkok. I went there on my honeymoon with my wife, and we went up to the peak, and I it was 35 years ago, so they didn't have that mall up there or anything else, and I remember getting to the top and wanted to walk down just a little set of stairs over the railing and look down, and my wife wouldn't go down because she's afraid of heights, and I come back up, and she goes, there was nobody around, and there was this little Asian man in a raincoat, and next thing I know, he flashed me.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Well, I'm surprised you say that happened in Hong Kong. That could happen in Bangkok, too. Well, thank you so much for calling, Paul. We appreciate it. Let's turn to Elaine in Carmel, New York. Elaine, you are live on the Fromer Travel Show. Nice to speak with you.
Yeah, same here. I was wondering what there is in the way of cooking tours in southern Italy.
There are so many. And when you say southern Italy, what area are you talking about?
I would say Sicily.
Sicily, okay. There's a woman named Renee Restivo, R-E-S-T-I-V-O, who does fabulous cooking tours in Sicily. I actually met her when I was there many years ago. If you Google Renee Restivo and Sicily, she was Australian with Sicilian roots, ended up moving back there and kind of bringing this Sicilian town back to life. It had been abandoned because there, if you go inland in Sicily, the economy is not great. They don't get the tourists. They don't have really industry there. And so to save this town, she started bringing in tourists to it. And you take her tours, which might include visiting with a Sicilian grandma who's famous in her community for her recipes, or going out with a shepherd for the day and learning how he makes cheese, or visiting a famous restaurant in Sicily and learning how to cook with the chef there. So that's just one. But there are a number. There's a very good resource. Well, there's actually, I wish I remembered the name of it. There is a program throughout Italy that allows you to go to the homes of the best local cooks. So not people who run restaurants, but you go into people's actual homes and they're locally famous for being incredible cooks. And you learn from them their recipes. And I'm blanking on the name of this program. But you can do it all over Italy. I bet if you Google it, you'll be able to find it. Jason, do you have anything to add to this one?
No, I think you've hit it. That was very well explained. I can't believe you came up with Renee Restivo right on the top of your head.
I did because she linked in me yesterday, and I had met her many years ago in Sicily, and so her name was right on the tip of my tongue. But I hope that helps, Elaine, and I think it's a great place to learn to cook because the food in Sicily is so interesting and so different from mainland Italy, mostly because it was invaded so often. So you're as likely to get grains as you are to get pasta there because there's so much Middle Eastern influence on the food. And they do a lot with sea urchin, and they do a lot with the wonderful plants that grow in the volcanic soil there. It's just an incredible place to eat and cook. I'm hearing music in my ear. We thank you so much for listening. And to those who are traveling, a hearty bon voyage.
Bon voyage.